Innovation is a word very commonly used to refer to things we do or would like to do to introduce something new to ad tech. But for all the times that the word comes up, how do we set ourselves up to actually deliver innovation to clients? What are practical things that ad tech and advertising leaders should be accounting for so that innovation can be consistently considered or achieved? Hey everyone, it's Noor. For this month's episode of Ad Tech Unfiltered, we put these questions on innovation in front of Walt Geer. He's an executive creative director of experience design at ad agency VMLYNR and a board member at the 4A's and the Advertising Club New York. Walt and I discuss some of the more practical considerations that go into bringing innovation consistently to clients and how hiring great talent and tasking your teams appropriately helps bring innovation to the table. Walt and I also discuss mentorship, progressing in your career, furthering diversity and inclusion work in advertising, using your voice on social media, and more. Let's get into this month's episode with Walt Geer on pitching innovation right now. Walt Geer is an executive creative director at VMLYNR, and we're talking about delivering creative innovation to brands and advertisers in the tech-first world. Walt, I know that you were just working on a pitch and you're consistently pitching and working on so many things. So thanks for making time to have this conversation on innovation with me.
I'm excited to be here. How about that?
I love it. So I'm going to start off with questions focused on innovation. But before I even jump into them, I want to make sure I am thinking about things through the lens with which you focus on business. Do you work on a combination of when it comes to like delivering innovation to clients, a combination of owned and paid experiences? I imagine it's an intermingling of both.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's an intermingling of both, excuse me. But the thing is, when my approach to innovation is one that I think it's important that you, how do you create scalable solutions that essentially are like empty canvases for clients? When I think about what innovation looks like, and oftentimes when we say the word innovation, people, you know, especially clients, leap directly towards it costing more, it taking more time to build. My approach is always, how do you make it as simple as possible? And how do you make a subtle tweak or subtle kind of change to a pre-existing thing to garner better engagement? So whether that be owned or paid or whatnot, like it's all kind of in one kind of in mind of just creating a solution that's unique, that's going to startle someone, really, so to speak.
You've worked on a broad span of accounts and industries over the years. I just was taking a look at all the different companies you've worked for, and it's a long list. You've been at JP Morgan, the New York Times, Seismic, Google, MTV, MySpace, and then a couple of agencies as well. As far as a span of expectations and tolerance for innovation, what would you say the range is? You kind of touched on it a little bit moments ago when you were talking about iterating on things from the past, but what do you think is the span of expectation that you've seen in the 20 years that you've been in the business as far as the low side of innovation versus like the high end bleeding edge of innovation? What would you say is like the span for clients?
It's interesting you ask that question because I think it would also vary based on the type of company you worked at, right? Being on the agency side, and specifically, you know, where 60, 65% of my work is on the health-related side, that's harder. Like a lot of people say, and I believe as well, that a lot of the pharma companies are like 7, 8 years behind everyone else. And the reason why is because on the pharma side, they're in a race to be second, not exactly a race to be first. And there's that hesitancy. And there's also a lot of legal restrictions to what they can and can't do. And because of that, again, hesitancy to kind of do the new groundbreaking stuff. So I'd say on the health side, it's actually a little more difficult to pitch things through, right? Because a lot of these folks are actually set in their way and they're happy with the way they've been executing things for the years of the past. Also, I've always found innovation being easier at the tech companies. I mean, clearly that's their job, right? So when I was at companies, it was more about how do we create these solutions, how do we create the story around them, and then sell them to as many people as possible. Whereas on the agency side, it's a little more about, well, who's got a cool technology or solution that can work with every one of these clients. So innovation is really different kind of based on where you're at. But at the end of the day, like it's all about how do you actually simplify it, right? How do you actually create something that allows someone to use the same assets that they're already been used to building with? If it requires them building something new or kind of, again, learning something new, it can often take away from it. But also when you build scalable solutions, it's cost effective, because a lot of times when people do these great, huge one-offs, it's not exactly great for the business because you're building for this one thing for a one-time use.
In terms of just getting to know what a client has an appetite for, we talked about you working on pitches a little bit earlier and even prior to starting this recording. How do you develop that sensibility when you're trying to vie for that new business and sense like how much that client is looking to go outside of the realm of what they've done historically? What does that exploration look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is on relationship building, right? And then kind of understanding what your client has done in the past, what innovation actually looks like to your client as well. The other half of that is proofs in the pudding, right? Like I always tell people that like innovating is easy if you're actually innovating based off actual data and insights. So a lot of times when I go back to clients and I'm with something that's inventive, I actually say, well, here's the problem that we're actually building for, and this is the solution. And because of this solution, we had to use this particular technology. And if we execute this, data shows that X amount of people might engage or do this particular thing, right? So it all comes back to the data and the science behind everything. A lot of people, when it comes to innovate, start with the whole like, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard this, like, let's use AI. So what can we build with AI? Well, you don't start with the technical kind of piece. You start with identifying the problem first. And if it ends up being that AI is a solution for that at some point, then so be it. But earlier on in my career, I actually built out one of the first usability labs that utilized biometric research. And what essentially that did is we partnered with MIT Labs to create this lab where you were hooked up like your hands, your heart and everything. And we were pulling pupil dilation, arousal, which is sweat in the palms, eye tracking, facial expressions, your heart rate. And through this, we could actually innovate. And I was building things, guaranteeing effectiveness before I actually brought it to a client. So I'd say I'd build this thing, bring it to a lab, see how well it worked, right? And because what we were doing is we were essentially, you know, measuring their emotional state when they engaged and then refining it, bring it back, test it again, refine it, and then bring it back to the client with research and study to basically say, hey, this is new. No one in the market has done it with this particular technology. And by the way, here's all the research that stood up behind it and why you should buy it. When I took that approach, like I was selling things for like pancakes, $7, $8, $10 million, boom, boom, easy. But building a usability lab was also $1 million expense. So when you start to talk about innovation and what innovation means, it means that companies need to actually invest in that. And not many people are willing to invest in innovation because it's a heavy price to pay, especially on the agency side where everyone's role is to be 40 hours billable and being able to be paid from a client. Now, when you're taking someone's time and let's say cutting it in half, that's an investment now that's being made on someone to ideate and go build things. And I don't think that we're seeing enough of that in a lot of companies, to be honest with you.
Speaking of the usability lab and gathering biometric data, I think that's something that we probably don't explore often enough as it relates to advertising and understanding the true efficacy of how people are reacting to the ads that we're serving out there. Going back to your point about investment and the investment upfront, how did you sell in the need for that lab if you were a part of the team that decided that needed to happen? Because I imagine at first there's going to be a lot of pushback.
It was kind of an easy one. I mean, back then, which was like 9 or 10 years ago, you know, we had quite the budget at Viacom, right? And of course, you'd have to spend your money, or by the end of the year, we all know by the end of the year, you lose it. So this was just an opportunity we had, and we brought it to the rest of the folks and was saying, hey, look, like we could use this lab and be the first to market with several solutions and be able to sell for millions of dollars. So that was the pitch. It was like, we build this thing, we're going to spend this much. However, ROI is going to be potentially this much. And when we did it, like we really did. I can't tell you how many solutions we built and came out of that. I have like five different patents that actually came out of that one lab at Viacom. The more famous or more well-known of them all was skippable pre-roll. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 skip that we see. The first iteration of it, though, the problem was that I was trying to solve was, look, we as users, we as consumers don't like pre-rolls, right? And at the time we were getting forced 30-second spots. So how do we actually create an opportunity that allows someone to get through that? Because what we learned in the biometrics lab was that when the 30-second spot would come, they'd minimize their browser, go someplace else, navigate, read some content, and where they heard the sound change, they'd go back and pull up their window. On a mobile device, they'd put it down and go do something else. And when they heard it, they would go back to it again, right? So they were listening for that sound as a cue to go back and let them know that it was done. The idea was, let's interact with it and allow someone to interact with this 30-second spot and turn that 30 seconds into 5 seconds. So in the first version, it was a Pepsi bottle, and you got a Pepsi commercial. The Pepsi bottle said, roll over to pour to pass. You roll your mouse over it, your mouse turned into the Pepsi bottle, it turned upside down, started pouring soda in the screen, in the video screen. So it took 5 seconds for that to fill up. And when 5 seconds was done, then we kicked you automatically to your video content. And then we had a little placement on the bottom left-hand corner that essentially said that skip was powered by Pepsi.
Having the opportunity to innovate there, was there the request to come up with that solution? Was that something you were already thinking about? Just as far as like the genesis of the idea, what was the permissions around coming up with something? Was it an ask? Was it a challenge? How did you go about pursuing?
That's a great question. So when I got hired there, I had left Google to come there. At the time, I was a rich media engineer, so I was doing a lot of the building of this stuff. And when I get over to Viacom, the job was, now you're responsible for helping us grow incremental revenue by way of new advertising solutions, whatever that be, figure it out. So like, I literally went into my office and it was like just thinking random stuff and kind of coming up with different ideas. What I learned very quickly was that it didn't matter how big or how great my ideas were. It was hard to sell them through. Right? Because they were just big ideas and no one could guarantee that they were going to work, which is why we ended up utilizing the biometrics lab. But my thought process was always starting with what is the problem. So for me, I actually sat down with our research team to essentially learn more about the sites and what was going on with our slew of sites. And at that time it was MTV, Nick Jr., VH1, and Comedy Central. So what I essentially learned was clearly about video. They did tons of research on how users interact and engage with the site. I just took that and then flipped that back into, okay, now if I was a consumer and I'm learning that whatever, that I don't like 30-second spots, what can I build to get around that? Okay, well, if I skip this, then a brand is going to be pissed. So how do I give that brand something in return for that time? Okay, we're going to allow you to know that once you skip this thing, that skip was powered by brand name here. So it was like, thank you, right? I appreciate that. Another big problem I was there was in that time of the 8, 9, 10 years ago with all publishers was that people don't type in like mtv.com anymore, right? Majority of people are actually getting to content by way of Google, by searches, or by way of posts from friends on social media. So another big problem there was, okay, well, everyone did homepage takeovers, but then homepage takeovers were dying because of social media, because now people are going around the homepage to get in the site. So how do we do homepage takeovers at scale? Another idea came out of that lab as well was, what if we actually launched a takeover out of a video player, right? And we use the video player to pop a div and then do stuff that like makes it look like the video was bleeding out onto the rest of the page. So it all starts with the research and understanding how users engage, whether it be a site or a particular product that you have or a vehicle. Right. It's how do they engage and how do we actually simplify that and make it easier? But then when you start to integrate brands, how do you give someone something in return for the time spent?
How much time do you have these days in the position you're in to do this type of exploration? Since I know that some of these things you had the opportunity to concept a little bit earlier in your career, how do you make time to work on these kinds of concepts today for 2021 and beyond?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good question because it's difficult now. I mean, because back then, even like Viacom and MySpace days, like Viacom, I think I had a budget of $15,000 a month that I was spending on ideating. And like my job, 40 to 60 hours a week, was sitting in my office and just coming up with ideas. It's different now, right? Because majority of my time now I spent pitching new business. But in regards to pitching that business, I am still coming to the table with inventive ideas and or solutions. The thing is, now, because of the vast amount of kind of, you know, responsibility that I have to innovate faster. And so it's become harder, but I think over time, that part of my brain has learned to kind of function at a higher speed. Whereas before, like I would sit down 2, 3, 4, 5 days until I come up with an idea. Now I feel like I can come up with ideas in a matter of hours. So it's like, it's kind of like working out my brain so much. I mean, look, I've also been doing this for like 21 years. And I think over the years, innovation changes, right? Like innovation 10 years ago was about what can you do on a page. Innovation today is how do you create an opportunity that's relevant? And that means using data. I come up with ideas at weird times, like when I'm in the shower or when I'm in bed or like I'm like, you know, playing a game with my daughter, just weird times things come up. And in ideating, For me, at least when I come up with these ideas, it's not something that happens naturally. Like I can sit down and focus for an hour and do something. It comes at weird times for me.
I feel that too, Walt, that when you work in advertising or ad tech or whatever vocation you fulfill from a marketing and advertising perspective, that work kind of never stops. You're just in some sort of standby mode. You're not fully powered down because you need that time to like find the ideas, and it happens at any hour of the day.
That's so true.
So I wanted to go back to something you just said in the previous answer as far as not having that reserve time to come up with ideas and only focusing on ideas, but you have a different type of work cycle process as an executive creative director. So with the focus on pitching, let's say that you've done the back and forth with a client, you've decided that you're going to get immersed into pitching new business and now sustaining that business. Let's say that we've come back from the client, we've gotten the information that we need. What do you now do with your team to make sure that you're buttoning up innovative opportunities that are going to suit that client?
Part of innovation is clearly understanding what's new and what's coming. But like in what we're doing on the agency side, it's almost impossible to stay up with everything. So what I actually do is majority of my background is spent on the tech side, ad tech side and publisher side. So fortunately for me, I still have a lot of those relationships. So I actually have 2 to 3 companies come to me a week to present ideas. You know, what I'm good at is identifying or seeing a technology and figuring out how I can actually build on top of it. Throughout the most bulk of my career, it was getting to that point of what that technology and that solution was. But now later on, it's okay, because there's enough people that are doing really cool and interesting things out there. So it's seeing what someone has, how do I build an idea that I can actually go on top of that I can scale out to some of my clients? And then again, that gets me ahead of the curve because I'm not necessarily using my team or my bandwidth to build things. So that's a big piece, right? And then of course, like I used to love, and I still do it every now and then, not as much as I did before, but meeting with what we do is like every half a year or every quarter, we do these innovation meetings. With my teams of the past, I always make sure that we have time set up for innovation, right? So I'm a huge, huge, huge advocate of the 80-20 rule at Google. And essentially that is 80% of your time doing your day-to-day work, 20% doing anything but your work, but spent on doing innovative solutions. In the past, what I've done with my development and design team is I've given them all 1 day a week to actually work on innovation. Don't answer emails, work on some type of inventive solution. Then what we ended up doing is they'd work with their partners and meet with their, with their managers once a week to kind of just make sure they're going down the right path, ensure that they're building things that could actually work for some of our clients. And then once a quarter, we would do like a Shark Tank, and it was designers versus designers and developers versus developers. And then opposing teams would vote for each other. Designers would vote on developers, developers don't vote on designers. This allowed us to build our entire backlog of work that we can actually start building out. But the cool thing about it is when two things. Number one is when they came through with the idea, it allowed the team to grow because I was asking them pitch it like it's their business, not just like, hey, here's this cool thing. So the pitch is their business, whatever. And then we'd choose winners. And the top three we would actually build. And then once every half of year, we would actually bring in some of our top clients to say, hey, here's our top 6 solutions that we've been working on the past 6 months. What do you guys think? And all it takes is that one client in the room to say, oh, that's really interesting. I could use that for this. And then, of course, every other client will then jump in and want it. And then what you do is you create an opportunity to say, hey, look, we can only launch with this with 1 or 2 people. And then after that, everyone's going to have to pay X amount of price. So that's how I've done over the years, really kind of like use other people to help innovate and help kind of build things. That was using teams, and now more so leaning on third-party technology. Vendors should do the same thing as well.
So I love what you were saying about pitching against, not against, but, you know, like doing that interaction amongst your team members. Because sometimes, you know, I look at people that I work with anywhere that I've worked with in my life, and I'm like, I don't know that much about what you bring to the table, because what you bring to the table, the client sees, I don't see it. So there's something really healthy about that.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Indeed. It's nice to see what everyone else is working on. It's nice to be able to collaborate. A lot of times we're not doing enough of that collaboration, especially when it comes to inventive stuff. What's more so frustrating is I think that a lot of these chief innovation officer roles, we're not seeing the right people in those positions, right? Because a lot of times, and no offense to anyone that are out there might be listening, but the majority of those people are people that used to be like ex-strategy folks or ex-accounts folks. When in theory, that needs to be like your creative technologist / creative. Even, and I was just had another conversation the other night, we were talking about what is the role of a chief creative officer, or what's the chief creative officer of tomorrow as opposed to what it is even like a year ago. And they're vastly different. The chief creative officer of tomorrow, even today, I'll say, it's not what it was before, which was someone who had a great eye for pixel perfect design and could create like incredible video content. But now it's that, but it's also someone who understands the digital landscape, understands like social media, understands like data and the use of data, right? And how to create dynamically optimized creative solutions from that. It's someone that understands the research. It's someone that is also a marketer. It's someone that is also a strategist. So we see so many of these because of the space we're in and the advances of technology and how it's transformed so rapidly. The roles are now changing where these people are responsible for so much more.
A lot of interdisciplinary skills at play. I completely agree with you. Maybe too often we're leaning into people who have like one siloed skill set and that not fulfilling the type of leadership that organizations really need. So I love that point. So I also want to make sure I'm veering some of our questions in another direction. Just given your breadth of experience, I wanted to talk to you about career advancement and progression as well. So well, anyone who knows you knows that you are an outspoken person. When do you recall being that starting point when you started to make your voice heard beyond the confines of what your job required you to do?
Probably a couple jobs ago, I was let go of a job and I had time to really think. And there was a moment where I was like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, I was like, I'm definitely Black, right? But also it was like, I was like this moment of realizing a couple things. Number one was, wow, like for so many years, I longed to have a mentor or someone to speak to, but I never really had that person. I wish I could actually sit down and talk to someone about how I feel right now. Then it kind of pivoted to, well, hold up, I'm asking for this. And I'm at that time as a vice president of creative director. And I haven't done the same thing for other people around me. And kind of one thing led to another. It was, and I'll never forget being, you know, I decided to take the year off and my family and I, we traveled a bunch. We were in the Bahamas at the time and I was poolside and saw a meme. And I forgot where I saw the meme at. I was scrolling and saw a meme and it said, do the things that make you happy because if you died today, your job would be posted before your obituary. And then all this kind of was literally all within a week's time thinking about this. And I decided, you know what, like I need to do more. That moment I started going out and mentoring folks. I started speaking at colleges. I started speaking at high schools. And that's also the time where I decided to start using my voice a little more on social media. It was a little nerve-wracking at first. And I think for a lot of people, there's this like worry or concern of, if I say this, what's my company going to say? What is my company going to say? At the time, I was not working anyplace. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to say what's on my mind. And for some reason, some of the stuff started to resonate. My platform grew significantly when I actually talked about an issue that affects all people. I did a post about ageism. And ageism affects you whether you're white, Black, brown, like whatever, right? It affects all people at some point in their career. That post took off, and then Adweek wrote about it, and then Forbes wrote about it. And like my like followers, all that stuff like almost tripled like overnight. And I feel at that time I got a significant amount of like tons of different ethnicities, including a large amount of white people who then followed me, who stood behind me because of that one post. And then I used that as a platform to continue the conversation, but talk about things like disabilities, like inclusiveness in Black and brown people. And I just kept going with it. And fortunately for me, I've gotten a lot of support and people who stand by some of the things that I say.
I don't remember exactly when it was that your Adweek post on ageism took place, but I feel like now it's really popular for people to either attempt to like make a name for themselves on social media through posting, but it's sometimes a little bit more formulaic. But going back to the piece you said about mentorship and wanting a mentor, but also mentoring others, what did mentoring other people give back to you?
For me, it was so rewarding. It's always rewarding every time I get to sit on a call and Zoom now and talk to someone, because I just feel like I see myself on a lot of people that I speak to. Like I wasn't the kid that was like great. Like my grades in high school sucked, right? Like I went to a 2-year college. I thought I was going to get a full scholarship for track. My grades were too messed up. I went to a 2-year college, had offers to go to some places. After that, I was too lazy and scared to go to the big D1 school. So I went to a small D1 school on a partial scholarship and then didn't have the money to finish my last years there, right? So like I was never this great kid who went to design school and everything. And I take these opportunities as an opportunity to really give back, right? And I learn a lot from other people and they inspire me in so many ways. And what inspires me the most is like, I've met so many young kids who are so hungry, so much more hungry than I am. And not in terms of just, you know, wanting to do the work and wanting to do incredible work for incredible brands and learn and do more. But really also in terms of wanting a more diverse workplace, they're doing things that I wish I could have had the confidence to do when I was their age. So these kids I think are way ahead of the curve in terms of where I was at that time. And I love to see that. And it inspires me in many ways to continue using my voice and my platform to do good.
I have felt the same. Not even people that I've mentored, just people that I know, I want to say abstractly through some of the social media spaces and seeing younger, like Gen Z, do really inspirational things. And that just reinvigorates my desire to do bigger and better things too. So I appreciate the point.
Oh yeah, it's an amazing thing to see. I mean, these kids have some serious confidence.
I also wanted to ask you about speaking or being outspoken, but then also making sure that you share something that has purpose, because going back to something I also just mentioned about everyone wants to find a way to develop a following now, and there's kind of a formula you can follow, like the regularity with which you post, the types of things you post, hashtags, like there's kind of a follower development strategy that people use to highlight themselves as thought leaders. But in order to really break through, I think you have to register with people. How do you gut check yourself that you are delivering value?
Yeah, it's so funny you say that, because it's like so many people, I think we're in a time right now where everybody wants to be an influencer and everybody wants to be famous and everyone wants tons of followers. Like when I post things, like I'm not one of these people like Gary Vee, he like posts like 6 times a day, I think he says he does. I don't have the time or bandwidth for that. I don't have the time or bandwidth to post every single day. I think it's social media is exhausting. I might post once a week, if that, but it's like when I post, it's for a reason. I did a post today on LinkedIn. It was a video of me getting my vaccine shot this last weekend, right? And the only reason why I did that is because I think it's important that, like, you know, when we look around, like Black people are the least to get a vaccine right now. Black people are also dying in higher numbers than anyone else. I think that, you know, there's a lot of reasons why, right? Trust and so on and so forth. But I did that post for the simple fact to show other people, hey, guess what? Like, I'm Black and I got this vaccine. And guess what? 48 hours later, I didn't die. I'm totally fine, had no issues. And that was about, like, again, like inspiring and showing other people that we should be doing these. So like when I post stuff, it's very intentional, but it also comes from the authentic place. This is how I feel at the moment. And it's genuinely never planned. It's like, this is how I feel right now. And I'm going to go do something. So I think that what works for me is just like just a level of authenticity, trying to schedule out what's my next 5 days of posts look like so I can reach as many people as possible.
Yeah.
I just think that's weird. I don't know. It's just me.
Well, it's happening so often, right? And I think like, you know, you and I are both people who utilize Clubhouse. A lot of people are doing that now. And there's a lot of rooms there where they're just talking about building your strategy and posting very regularly. And it's very formulaic. It feels formulaic to me. So it's a relief hearing you say that doesn't resonate with you. And then also, I think a part of your point that I heard was that it's about sharing something that is going to have purpose for the audience that you share it with, right? So that seems like an important thing and an important part of the gut check too.
Oh yeah, indeed. It's funny when you mention Clubhouse too. It's like the biggest rooms on that app are just stuff that's about being an influencer or famous or whatnot. It's like, learn how to be an Instagrammer, learn how to be this, LinkedIn. It's like, jeez, man. I think it's exhausting. I think it's really exhausting. I literally don't have time for all that.
Agreed. I felt the same. I've kind of had a little bit of a plateau, not to sidebar on that, but I found it exhausting too. So in terms of just continuing to improve yourself, because I mean, Walt, you've done so many things across these 2 decades and, you know, some might say that's a long time. Some people might say you've achieved a lot, right? In just two decades of time, but surely, you know, you're inspired to do bigger and better things. Like you mentioned about being inspired by people that you mentor, or just other people, young people that you've observed. Where do you see room for your own professional development and growth? Where do you have excitement to continue to grow this year and moving into the future?
That's it. You know what, to be honest with you, I just want to do great work that just gets used and seen by a lot of people. And this is what I've done throughout the bulk of my career. Like, I've never focused on the what's next. I'm very much in the present person. Because I feel that if I worry about where I'm going to be next, or when am I going to be this and that, achieve this, like there's just too much room for distractions. So my thing is what am I working on right now that I can make, you know, a great impact on, and I could just do the best work possible, and then I move on from there. And I know many people are so different. Like, I maybe that's like the lazy part of me, and like not wanting to spend too much time doing it. But my, like, I don't look beyond a few months out majority of the time. That's just me, I guess.
So maybe I'll restructure the question a little bit, because you're right. I don't mean so much as like, or do you aspire to be like the president of an agency or something like that? But I mean more so along the lines of, where do you want to make room for you to grow just this year? What are things you're interested in learning more about that you haven't had time to dedicate towards?
I could go down a list of things, but I think it's really just going a little deeper on some of the technologies. Like, there are areas of AI that I'm totally not that, you know, great on, right? Of course, things like blockchain, right? And then, of course, like, God, everybody knows, like, NFTs are such a big conversation right now. I feel like technology right now, like, we're in this moment where it's like leaping so fast, and keeping up is really difficult. And so for me, it's really just keep my ear to the ground and ensuring that I can keep up with the latest and greatest. Because again, we back down into, you know, what does innovation look like and how do we create these solutions? Like, you have to be, I feel like, in so many different places at once. But even going back to your original, like, broader question, you, like, if I were to see myself like 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, like, hopefully it'd be in a chief creative officer type of role, really kind of, you know, making space for other people of color at the table. I think that's the other area that I think is so important. If we make more space at the table, more room for the table, more for more people that look like us, then the work that we produce and put out into the rest of the world will be that much better.
So we obviously live in a world where there's new levels of visibility around the fact that there's a lot of diversity work to be done, but there are a lot of hurdles, and it's going to be, I think the movement, unfortunately, is going to take place at a glacial pace, right? There's a lot of work to be done. Are there any observations that you've made in terms of things you need to educate yourself on, or that you want to play a role in advancing so that more people are on the side of believing that this type of advancement actually needs to take place?
You know, for me personally, I think it's always about learning more about the business, right? Because like, the more you impact the business, the more you're impacting the dollars and revenue, the more opportunity you have, right? And I try to tell that for a lot of folks that are actually coming behind me. But that's I don't know that I have a total great answer for you on that one, to be honest with you.
I think there.
And I apologize. I'm like,
don't apologize. I mean, I think the best thing is when somebody says, I don't know the answer to that question, but it's something that I think about. Maybe I should wrap it on another question, though, based on something else I heard you say, Walt, which was spending time, and I'm paraphrasing here, kind of developing like a deeper domain expertise in certain areas. And you mentioned AI and NFTs, blockchain. Do you leave it on your teams to come up and figure out how to put those things in front of clients? There are these like core subject matter spaces that clients have intrigue around. How do you guide your teams to present a perspective that's going to be valuable?
I've put that on my shoulder to make sure or ensure that the work that we're actually putting forward towards the client is kind of leaning forward in terms of technology and the advancements of what we see in the rest of the space. I always tell my teams, like, it's in how I, let's actually go a little further back. How I like to build my teams is, look, I think there's tons of designers and tons of developers out there that are all really great. Like, you can find tons of really good people in both those spaces. But what's harder to find is those people who are good at doing that design and development, and or great speakers and storytellers. And on top of that, people who have their ear to the ground and understand what's kind of what else is going on in the space. Some of the best folks that I've worked with in my past, my team, are those people that are like, on like the fashion companies every day. They're on like iPhoneHacks.com every day. And they're these people that just like know a lot about everything that's going on. And those are really good people to have around you. And I always say too, like I'm a huge advocate of ensuring that like I'm hiring people that like you should be hiring your replacements. People on their team who are good enough to do your job, because these are the people that allow you to learn as well. And I get that there's insecurities around that a lot. But by doing that, like, you're able to come forward with the best work to the client. What's also so important is that we are working as creatives as closely as possible to the strategy folks, right? Because they're the strategy is the ones that's actually, you know, developing the insights and you know, and the whole, like, everything about the clients and who they're reaching and so on and so forth. they're the ones that are funneling the information to us, right? And that's like a hip-to-hip kind of relationship that we should be having to ensure that the ideas that I'm presenting back to the client are stuff that's actually relevant to who they are and to their business. Our role is also to be teaching these clients this stuff, right? That's what they're paying, as from the agency side, that's what they're paying you for as well, right? To do incredible work, to bring like cutting edge, you know, stuff to them and be able to teach them stuff. So like, we have to be learning at a rapid pace to be able to keep up and ensure that they're doing that work as well. But as I said earlier, a lot of times some clients, as much as they want to be inventive and be the first to market, majority of them don't. Majority of them want to wait and actually see someone else do it first. And I think when we start talking about even things like NFTs, that gets very interesting. And I'm curious to see who's going to be the first client to actually do something different and or unique with that. Again, it's still a space I don't know thoroughly yet. I know enough to be somewhat dangerous. You know, my job is to at least know that much so that I can make sure that I can bring it back to the client and explain how that could potentially be an opportunity for their brand.
I'm going to go backwards on the points that you mentioned as far as just what it is that we need to be bringing to clients. We want to make sure we're educating clients and educating ourselves enough so we can do that for the clients appropriately. We want to be working across departments and be close to them so we can all see how we're bringing value together. We want to hire people who can replace us and who are doing that deeper digging to understand these myriad of concepts that are out there that ultimately we have to stay on top of, even if it's really hard to do. Did I miss anything? Yeah.
No, I think you have an incredible memory, like better than mine. That's it.
Well, I really appreciate you having a conversation about innovation and how to bring it to advertising and how to bring it to ad tech.
Thank you. I appreciate the conversation and I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you. This has been awesome.
Thanks again to Walt Gear, Executive Creative Director at VMLYNR. What I find often lost in translation regarding innovation are many of the practical thoughts Walt brought up. For instance, it's okay if your innovation shows up as iteration, if that solution best meets your client's needs and stays within budget. But also, finding innovative solutions takes time and energy. So setting up time for you and maybe your team to reflect on what new opportunities make sense for clients is necessary. Innovation isn't an automated process. Walt sounds off on a lot of his thoughts on social channels, and he's candid when sharing his opinions. We didn't cover off on so many of the cool projects that he works on, but I'd have to encourage you to go check them out. You can follow Walt on Twitter at ThirdGears, that's the number 3RDGEERS, or look up Walt Gear on LinkedIn or Clubhouse to read and hear more. Thanks for all the candid thoughts, Walt. That's it for this episode. Also, if you liked it, please subscribe to AdTech Unfiltered on the podcast app of your choice. And if you really liked it, we'd love if you'd give us a 5-star review. I'm your host, Noor Nasir. We'll be back real soon with another episode.